Today on 5 O'Clock Shadow, a very special tribute to the late, great, and dearly departed Maggie Thatcher. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This week witnesses the London funeral of the controversially conservative former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, who succumbed recently to heart disease following a years-long bout with dementia. Thatcher earned two main honorifics stemming from her leadership heyday in the 1980s. She was named a Baroness in 1992, but also dubbed the Iron Lady by Red Star journalist Yuri Gavrilov for her fierce opposition to the Soviet Union and socialism and her propensity for corporate favors, union busting, and domestic austerity.
There is no doubt that the Prime Minister has in many ways achieved substantial success for the economy. There is one statistic that I understand is not, however, challengeable, and that is that over her 11 years, the gap between the richest 10% and the poorest 10% in this country has widened substantially. How can she say at the end of her chapter of British politics that she can justify many people in a constituency such as mine being relatively much poorer off, much less well-housed, and much less well-provided than it was in 1979. Surely she accepts that is not a record that she or any Prime Minister can be proud of.
Mr. Speaker, all levels of income are better off than they were in 1979. But what the Honourable Member is saying is that he would rather the poor were poorer, provided the rich were less rich. That way you will never create the wealth for better social services as we have. And what a policy! Yes, he would rather have the poor poorer, provided the rich were less rich. That is a liberal policy. Yes, it came out. He didn't intend it to, but he did.
I give way to the Honourable Gentleman.
I'm extremely grateful. The Prime Minister is aware that I detest every single one of her domestic policies and have never had that.
And I think that the Honourable Gentleman knows that I have the same contempt for his socialist policies as the people of East Europe who have experienced it have it for that. I pointed out that the logic of those policies are they'd rather have the poor poorer. Once they start to talk about the gap, they'd rather the gap were that. Down here. That. Not that. But that. So long as the gap is smaller, they'd rather have the poor poorer. You do not create wealth and opportunity that way. You do not create a property-owning democracy that way.
On the global stage, Thatcher is perhaps most famous for her invasion of the Argentine Malvinas Islands, considered by the United Kingdom to be one of its colonial possessions. Thatcher dispatched tens of thousands of British troops to the South Polar region to reclaim the so-called Falkland Territory from an Argentine attack and reoccupation. London-based Sky News covered the invasion in favorable terms.
What's your reaction,
Just rejoice at that news and congratulate our forces and the Marines.
She might have been doubted in public and in private, but now we know that Margaret Thatcher's determination to retake the Falkland Islands never wavered. But the Falklands archives reveal an honest, rare admission from her. I just say it was the worst, I think, moment of my life. As British forces prepared for the decisive Battle of Stanley, she took a call in Downing Street. It was just before midnight in London. On the line from Washington was President Reagan. He had a plea, a final request for diplomacy. It fell on deaf ears. As Britain had had to go into the islands alone with no outside help, she could not now let the invader gain from his aggression, an official Downing Street log of the conversation reveals. She had lost valuable British ships and invaluable British lives. The relationship between the American and British leaders, which was genuinely special, was being strained.
We see Mrs. Thatcher's total conviction, her total grip and grasp on government. I think at this time she was listening more than perhaps at any other stage during her premiership, listening to expert advice and acting on it.
Realisation in London that some British ships had been damaged or destroyed by French-made Exocet missiles owned by the Argentinians sent the government into something close to panic. Thatcher sent a fuming telegram to François Mitterrand demanding a planned shipment of Exocets to Peru be delayed or else. As you yourself agreed, there can be no doubt that Peru will pass them, the missiles, onto Argentina, she wrote. This would have a devastating effect on the relationship between our two countries. The threat worked.
The American president at the time of the first British invasion of the Americas since 1812, Ronald Reagan, looked the other way in violation of the hemispheric compact known as the Rio Treaty, which bans European invasions of the Western Hemisphere. Nevertheless, Reagan and Thatcher became the poster children of 1980s social conservatism and global militarism.
The government which I lead has been in power now for just over half a year. We face great difficulties, some of them deep-seated and long-standing, and some stemming from beyond our shores. And I don't pretend that anything's going to be remedied immediately. But we are determined upon a change. We're determined to return to the first principles which has traditionally governed our political and economic life, namely, the overall responsibility of the individual rather than the state for his own welfare, and the paramountcy of Parliament for the protection of fundamental rights. The government I lead has a resounding mandate to restore the faith and the fortunes of the nation. We shall stick at the task, whatever the difficulties and however great the endurance required. And we shall do so, Mr. President, in the conviction that our allies across the Atlantic have confidence in us. Just as we have confidence in the strength and ingenuity of the United States to meet any challenge and triumph over any adversity that confronts them.
One of the most bitter legacies of Margaret Thatcher is her prosecution of a dirty war against Irish patriots of the six counties of Northern Ireland, which had become a de facto English colony. Thatcher sanctioned assassinations against nationalist dissidents and members of the IRA with a ferocity equal to the Malvinas invasion. Former parliamentarian and Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams said this week that neither history nor Ireland will well countenance Thatcher's legacy.
Margaret Thatcher, in her terms as British Prime Minister, did great hurt to people in Britain, to working class communities across Britain, but also to people here in Ireland. Most Republicans and Nationalists will remember, and maybe many others, her for the shameful role she played during the epic hunger strikes in 1980 and 1981. And how she pursued a draconian policy of militarism, embraced collusion, authorised the killing of citizens, both in overt and covert operations. Even though, in marked contradiction to her public posturing, she opened up a back channel of communication with Sinn Féin. She failed to act on the logic.
Irish-American antipathy to Thatcher was expressed even more vividly this week at a People's Wake for Maggie Thatcher, hosted by John McDonough of WBAI's Radio Free Erin at the Irish pub Rocky Sullivan's in Red Hook, Brooklyn.
We're turning out for the Irish Wake for Margaret Thatcher now. It has been Margaret Thatcher that has brought us together. But we're really here to remember the victims and not remember her. And if we do remember her, it's her policies. So we want to remember the coal miners that went out on strike led by Arthur Scargill and how some of them were killed and shot with plastic bullets. We also want to remember the 323 sailors that were killed on the Belgrano in neutral waters by Margaret Thatcher during the Malvinas War. Remember, it's not the Falklands, it was the Malvinas War. And I want to thank the people that are in here from Argentina tonight that came down, and how she was not brought up on war crimes. It's beyond me, but they never seem to do in the Western countries. And particularly, being this is an Irish bar, we want to remember the 10 hunger strikers
who died on hunger strike because of the intransigence of Margaret Thatcher. And one person, if you were in New York in 1981 and were at the demonstrations at the British Council, you know there was huge crowds there with the mock coffins, and then the march that went down 2nd Avenue, where you made a left onto 47th Street into Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, where there was a flatbed truck, and one person that was always there for all the funerals, and that was Father Pat Maloney. And I want to introduce the saint of the Lower East Side, Father Pat Maloney. May I first ask you to have just a moment of silence in memory of the glorious 10, the men, Bobby Sands and his glorious companions, who were ruthlessly murdered after a long life of torture by the Butcher of London, known as the Iron Lady. May God grant glory to our glorious martyrs. But let us remember, they speak about the Iron Lady. Iron, there was nothing iron about her. She was sullied, dirty, stained steel, with a heart of steel, a heart that allowed 10 vibrant young Irish men die slowly the torturous death of hunger strike. She was the woman who denied our Irish men the right to human dignity and the status of political prisoners. And let us look back for a moment. If a man is a common criminal in any country of the world, he's given a fair trial, at least a jury of his peers, and can call witnesses on his behalf. But our men were picked off the street, lifted, is the word they used back in the occupied zone, dumped into not prisons, but internment camps, not allowed the opportunity to challenge witnesses on the very word of the special branch, or even in the south, but in the north, the B specials and the others, on their very word, these men were interred and tortured. I'd like to read to you from the words of Bobby Sands a few lines. It is frightening to see men become aged at 18 and 19. Young men who are fit and strong in mind and body a year ago now resemble shrunken skulls of human beings. Every aspect of the H-block life, from cold, empty cells and denial of every comfort, to refusal of medical treatment, is designated to grind down our resistance. But it will not succeed. They may hold our bodies in the most inhuman conditions, but while our minds remain free, our victory is assured. That was from Bobby Sands while languishing in his prison cell. Now we can look at the hunger strikers for a moment, but imagine the torture of the mothers who lost sons, the wives who lost husbands, the children who lost their parents, and all because they asked to be recognized for who they were. The freedom fighters of Ireland, attempting to finish what had started in 1916. Thatcher was a butcher in the same lineage of Lloyd George, who after the Civil War, threatened that if we did not sign the treaty, they would annihilate our nation. And our men had no choice. Some of them, but not all, including my father of blessed memory, did not lay down their arms. They hid them until another day would come. And then we had followed, of course, Churchill. Another one they lauded as a great man. And Churchill threatened the then Taoiseach of Ireland and said, if you do not give up your ports and support Britain, they threatened us again. Again, without much success. Now we can roll history on to the time of Maggie Thatcher. And as was mentioned before, when the Belgrado was sailing away, after it had agreed to leave the Malvinas, Malvinas, Argentina, she blew them out of the water, leaving Argentine women without husbands, children without fathers. Then, when good, honest, decent British citizens from the different colonies reached the time that they could come back to Mother England to look for prosperity, British citizens bearing British passports, they became indentured servants, similar to slaves in their so-called motherland. And when they went in the streets in peaceful protest, Thatcher referred to them as thugs, thugs, thugs. We can refer back to her as murderous, murderous, murderous. That's who she was. Now, it might sound strange and maybe a little contradictory that a Catholic priest should speak so vehemently and strongly. But when you look into the eyes of the mothers of some of the hunger strikes, I had the great privilege of doing the Mass, the 10th anniversary of the hunger strike in St. Patrick's Cathedral. Members of the Sands family and members of other hunger strike families were there. The pain was still there, and I'm sure those who are still living, that pain continues forever. This was the pain inflicted by the woman that the Queen of England should call a lady. By the longest shot of the imagination, you could not call this woman a lady. She was ruthless. But then again, the Gospel tells us we must forgive. But remember, forgiveness is not unconditional. Forgiveness is based on the willingness to say I'm sorry, to repent, and to make restitution. Thatcher never made any even attempt to apologize or say sorry to the Irish people. And unfortunately, in today's Ireland, there are those who have bowed to her and maybe shake hands with the Queen that backed her up. That's a different story. Far be it for me to get into politics. But however, well, the uprising in England showed how she treated her own people. I'd like to make something crystal clear. I have never been anti-English, only British and English policy. English, as Sean McBride had said one time, the great statesman, when it came to dealing with the Irish, the English had a totally different view, a totally different morality. We were considered subhuman. So we have to take all that into consideration in seeing and asking ourselves, who was Maggie Thatcher? Let me again, Bobby Sands would like to speak to you from his throne in heaven. There is a beautiful poem he wrote called Poetic Justice. It is the strangest dream, sure enough, of all I've ever had. I dreamt I'd left this life, and to be honest, I was glad. And so I felt my soul ascending. I looked down to whence I came, and all I saw was nakedness, suffering, and pain. I proceeded farther. When we reached the Golden Gate, where the Lord sat on his throne, and Peter called upon me to come to show them alone. Bob, said the Lord, you've done all right down there. Of torture, pain, and suffering, don't I know you had your share? Let him in, Peter, said the Lord, and go in peace, my son, for the Lord your God forgives you and everything you have done. Well, I was a happy soul, for the good Lord had forgiven all. I was just about to collect my wings when I heard Roy get his call. Mason, Lord, said Peter, I think you know him well, and by his color of his soul, he has plenty to tell. Peace be with you, Lord, said Roy. And now, the same Lord is saying to Thatcher, peace to you. Have you anything to confess? Yes, Lord, Thatcher said. You must believe me. It was Cromwell that made the mess. And Merlin, Rees, and Winslow, they led me far astray. Lord, what else could I have done there? I could find no other way. That's what probably Maggie is saying before the throne of the Lord tonight. She's probably copying a plea. She's probably saying what the Nazis said at Nuremberg. I did my duty. I served my king and empire, my queen and empire, a blood-stained, ruthless, vicious empire that thought nothing but the glory of the crown and their own, filling their own coffers and their safes with the gold of the world. And what about H. Block, the Lord said to Maggie, and all those naked men you kept? Don't you know, said the Lord, I watched them, and every night they wept. You tortured them, and you held them all those years, naked and suffering. They wept a million tears. What is to be done, said Peter? My Lord, you must contrive. Poetic justice, Peter, said the Lord. And to Thatcher, send her down to the H Block 5. As a priest of the Catholic Church, I must say, may God have mercy on her soul. May God deliver us all from the evil that such people can perpetrate throughout the world. I think it might have been Voltaire who said, such people are belched out from the depths of hell on the eve of perdition. Hitler would have been one of them. Thatcher would have been another. And there would be others that we are not here to speak about tonight. I appeal to you, good people here, remember, in 1916, a handful rose against the evil empire. And as long as there are even a few good men and women willing to stand up for the cause of justice and freedom, the likes of Thatcher will not have prevailed. They will prevail if we continue to banter with and play with the British. They've broken every treaty they've ever made with us. Now, I am not indeed an advocate of the return to the bomb or the bullet. I believe sincerely in the just war of defense, should that ever happen. But 3 years from now, as you know, we will celebrate the glorious 100th anniversary of the Irish uprising, the revolution, not just a rebellion, not a rising. It was a revolution in which the men and women of Ireland revolted against the tyranny of the most evil empire that ever ruled the world. It is our responsibility to see that the sacrifices of Bobby Sands and his men be not in vain. It's our responsibility to hope and pray for an Ireland united and free, a 32-county country. And remember the words of Thatcher. I close with these. They were, out, out, out. I fully agree with her. Out, Thatcher, out, Queen, out, all of you who do not believe belong on the soil of Ireland. May God love and bless you all.
But somebody just came up to me with an English accent. She says, can I say something? I said, about who? She said, Thatcher. So she promised me a couple of seconds.
I have the slightly opposing view about her death in that I wish she'd lived to be 115, lonely, demented, covered in bed sores. But you can't always get what you want. Even her children hate her. Her daughter is crazy and her son is a crook. So see what her loins have spawned. This is a woman who said there's no such thing as society. You know, is there anything more you can say after that? So anyway, I'm happy to celebrate the passing of this devil woman with all of you. And I did live under the tyranny of this witch, so I understand what it was. That's all.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York. Meanwhile, across the pond in London, Thatcher's legacy was also being critically assessed by parliamentarian Glenda Jackson, the former Oscar-winning best actress in Women in Love and A Touch of Class.
Glenda Jackson.
Mr. Speaker, when I made my maiden speech all in this chamber a little over two decades ago, Margaret Thatcher had been elevated to the other place, but Thatcherism was still reeking as it had reeked for the previous decade, the most heinous social, economic and spiritual damage upon this country, upon my constituency and my constituents. Our local hospitals were running on empty. Patients were staying on trolleys in corridors. I tremble to think what the death rate for pensioners would have been this winter if that version of Thatcherism had been fully up and running this year. Our schools, parents, teachers, governors, even pupils, seem to spend an inordinate amount of time fundraising in order to be able to provide basic materials, such as paper and pencils. The plaster on our classroom walls were kept in place by pupils' artwork and miles of sellotape. Our school libraries were dominated by empty shelves, very few books, and those books that were there, again, were being held together by ubiquitous sellotape and offcuts from teachers' wallpaper used to bind those volumes so that they could at least hang together. But by far, the most dramatic and heinous demonstration of Thatcherism was certainly not only in London, but across the whole country in metropolitan areas, where every single shop doorway, every single night, became the bedroom, the living room, the bathroom for the homeless. They grew in their thousands. And many of those homeless people had been thrown out onto the streets from the closure of the long-term mental hospitals. We were told it was going to be called, it was called, care in the community. What in effect it was no care at all in the community. I was interested to hear about Baroness Thatcher's willingness to invite those who had nowhere to go for Christmas. It's a pity she didn't start building more and more social houses after she entered into the right to buy. So perhaps there would have been fewer homeless people than there were. As a friend of mine said, during her era, London became a city Hogarth would have recognised, and indeed he would. But the basis to Thatcherism, and this is where I come to the spiritual part of what I regard as a desperate, desperately wrong track that the lead that Thatcherism took this country into, is that we were told that everything I had been taught to regard as a vice, and I still regard them as vices, under Thatcherism was in fact a virtue. Greed, selfishness, no care for the weaker, sharp elbows, sharp knees, they were the way forward. We heard much over, and will continue to hear over the next week, of the barriers that were broken down by Thatcherism, the establishment that was destroyed.
We can't take it.
What we actually saw, the word that has been circling around with stars around it, is that she created an aspirational society. It aspired for things. As indeed one of the former prime ministers, who himself had been elevated to the House of Lords, spoke about selling off the family silver, and people knowing under those years the price of everything and the value of nothing. What concerns me is that I am beginning to see possibly the re-emergence of that total traducing of what I regard as being the basis spiritual nature of this country, where we do care about society, where we do believe in communities, where we do not leave people to walk by on the other side. That isn't happening now. And if we go back to the heyday of that era, I think we will see replicated yet again the extraordinary human damage that we as a nation have suffered from, the talent that has been totally wasted because of the inability to genuinely see the individual value of every single human being. My honourable friend from Hackney referred to the fact that although she had differed with Lady Thatcher in her policies, she felt duty-bound to come to pay tribute to the first woman Prime Minister this country had produced. I am a generation who was raised by women. The men had all gone to war to defend our freedoms. They didn't just run a government, they ran a country. And the women that I knew who raised me and millions of people like me, who ran our factories and our businesses, put out the fires when the bombs dropped, they would not have recognized their definition of womanliness as being incorporated an iconic model of Margaret Thatcher to pay tribute to the first Prime Minister deputed by female gender. Okay, but a woman, not on my terms.
Point of order, Sir Tony Baldry.
Mr. Speaker, the conventions of the House in respect of those occasions, rare occasions, on which the House chooses to make tributes to a person who has been deceased, are well established. This is not and has never been a general debate on the memory of the person who has been deceased, but an opportunity for tributes, not an opportunity for honourable members to denigrate the memory of the person who has been deceased.
Resume his seat. I'm grateful to the honourable gentleman for his, and I use the term advisedly, attempted point of order. Let me be explicit for the benefit both of the honourable gentleman and of the House. All honourable and right honourable members take responsibility for what they say in this place. The responsibility of the chair is to ensure that nothing unparliamentary occurs. Let me assure the honourable gentleman, for the avoidance of doubt, nothing unparliamentary has occurred. We are debating a motion that says that this House has considered the matter of tributes to the Baroness Thatcher.
Wake up, Maggie. I think I got something to say to you. It's late September, and I really should be back at my school. I know I keep you amused, but I feel I'm being used. Oh, Maggie, I couldn't have tried anymore. You led me away from my home just to save you from being alone. You stole my heart, but I love you anyway.
Don't worry me none.
Meanwhile, back in Brooklyn, Rocky Sullivan revelers were treated to a special appearance by Satan, Maggie's Bones, and Ronald Reagan, as channeled by political satirist and mayoral candidate Randy Credico, as introduced by John McDonough.
As we all know, Maggie Thatcher's BFF, LOL, see, I'm tweeting now, so come on. Her best friend was Ronald Reagan. The two of them are inseparable, even in death. We have with us today Ronald Reagan with the devil in hell and Maggie Thatcher in tow. We could just open up the runway here. He's kissing the coffin. And there's the devil behind him. Not much difference between the three of them, is there? I give you the President of the United States, Ronald Reagan.
I would just like to present one of my friends, Satan, who traveled all the way from hell with me today to be part of this great event. I never could speak off the top of my head, so there's no teleprompters here. I'm going to have to read this if I can see through this mask. We are here today to take this lovely lady back to hell. We've been waiting a long time, and one of the reasons why she lived to be the age that she's lived to is because hell wasn't big enough for Miss Thatcher. We had to build a parallel hell. I want to thank her for all the great work she's done over 90,000 years on behalf of Satan, for killing all those young boys down there in the Falklands or the Malvinas, whatever you say. That was a great piece of work. And Satan is extremely happy and is the reason why she's got such a great estate down there with us. And what she did with Arthur Scargill, destroying the Union there, it's just better than what I did with the air traffic controllers. So this has been a great day to finally bring her down. The room is ready for her. And God bless America, which I think is the greatest nation in the land. I've always said that. And I can't think of someone that has done more harm, which gives her the reason to come down with me today. I love this woman, and so does Satan. Am I right, Satan? She's great. There's a nice big bag of bones in here that were taken down on the express route straight to hell. All right, so get a good look at this woman and remember all the great things she's done against humanity. No one could have done it better than her. And I want to thank Rocky Sullivan for bringing me and Satan up here on the IKEA boat from hell. That's some friggin' ride, I must tell you. Taking that IKEA boat, we're going to go shop around over here at IKEA because I found out they use non-union labor there. And then we're going to go to Fairway where they have some more non-union labor there as well. And maybe we can bring some slaves down with us to take care of us for the rest of our lives. And maybe we live happily ever after. I split with Nancy and I'm proposing to this bag of bones here today for all the great work that she's done. God bless you all for being here today. Enjoy the music. And let's go, Maggie. Let's go to hell. Come on.
I saw a newspaper picture from that political campaign. A woman was kissing a child who was a obviously in pain. She spills with compassion. Is that young child's face in her hands she grips? Can you imagine all that greed and avarice coming down on that child's lips? Well, I hope I don't die too soon. I pray to Lord my soul to say, yes, I'll be a good boy. I'm trying so hard to behave, because there's one thing I know, I'd like to live long enough to save her. That's when the horror of the world, Margaret was her madam. And the future looked as bright and as clear as the black tarmac Adam. Well, I hope that she sleeps well at night, isn't haunted by every tiny detail. When she held that lovely face in her hands, all she thought of was betrayal. And now the cynical ones say that it all ends the same in the long run. Try telling that to the desperate father who just squeezed the life from his only son. And how his only voice is in your head, and dreams you've never dreamt. Try telling him the subtle difference between justice and contempt. Try telling me she isn't angry with this pitiful discontent. When they flaunt it in your face as you line up for punishment, and then expect you to say thank you, straighten up, proud and pleased, because you've only got the symptoms, you haven't got the whole disease. Just like a schoolboy whose head's like a tin can, filled up with dreams, then parked down the drain. Try telling that to the boys on both sides, being blown to bits of beaten and beaten. Who takes all the glory and none of the shame? Well, I hope you live long now. I pray the Lord your soul to keep. I think I'll be good. We fold our arms and start to weep. I never thought for a moment that human life could be so cheap. But wait. Down.
And that concludes today's 5 o'clock shadow. The program was engineered by Michael G. Haskins, Reggie Johnson, and Sean Rhodes. We welcome your comments, questions, leaks, and suggestions with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.